Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Jack Curry is with us right now. Talk a little baseball. I know he's got a book out as well. Jack, how are you?
He has a book coming out, and forget the lottery, because it comes out the day of the lottery. It's about full count. It's not about the Knicks winning the ping pong ball.
Is that the day it comes out? May 14th it comes out?
Wow. Comes out on May 14th. Come on, Joe. I want you to have that marked on your calendar. Let's go. I need all the support I can get from you.
Well, I mean, it is marked on my calendar because it's the day of the NBA draft lottery. So, anyway, how are you, Jack?
I'm doing well, guys. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Tell us about, because it's with David Cohn, called Full Count, the Education of a
Cohn,
Pitcher.
It's got to be good.
Oh,
no,
absolutely.
Cohn's one of the best.
Tell us more about it.
I think, guys, what happened here is, first of all, I've covered baseball, Major League Baseball, for close to 30 years, and I'd never seen a pitcher who I felt put more thought and more creativity into the art of pitching, just being out there. And whenever I covered games and I watched David on the mound, I always felt that you could almost see the wheels spinning. What am I going to do next? Am I going to throw a splitter? Am I going to throw a slider? Am I going to throw a high fastball? What am I going to do in this situation? So I covered David when I worked for the New York Times, and when I transitioned over to the S Network, we became colleagues. And I approached him a few years ago and told him, I'd love to get inside your mind as a pitcher. I'd love to know what was going on in your head during all of those years. And on top of that, as Joe and Evan, you guys just alluded to, I said, I know you've got a ton of great baseball stories. So why don't we do this book where it's a pitching book and we talk a lot about pitching, right? But while we're telling theories and stories and anecdotes about pitching, let's peel off and meander off every once in a while and tell a Derek Jeter story, tell a Mariano Rivera story or an Andy Pettit story. So I think you get all of that in this book. You get the mind of a pitcher,
right?
But you also get the story of a pitcher's life.
What I loved about David as a pitcher, you know, besides his great years with the Mets, the championships with the Yankees, and I used to imitate this in the schoolyard, was the Laredo.
Yep,
I loved the David Cohn Laredo and how he would whip that out, usually with two strikes on a hitter, and it seemed to work a lot of the time, the big David Cohn Laredo pitch.
Well, the origin of that name, Evan, is in the book, and he was pitching for the Mets, and Keith Hernandez is yelling Laredo to him. Basically saying what you're saying, throw that down under slider right now. And David didn't know what he was talking about at that point. He didn't know that he was talking about a city in Texas or a town in Texas. And he wanted you to go down low and emulate where Laredo is in Texas.
Wow.
And he learned that from wiffle ball, guys. And this is what I think people will appreciate about this book. There's a lot of personal stuff in there about how David Cohn became David Cohn. You don't just show up in the major leagues throwing 95. There's stories about his dad realizing that he wasn't going to be 6'4", 250, and making sure that he used his legs as a pitcher. We have stories about him playing wiffle ball with his brother. And to your point, Evan, he drops down and throws a wiffle ball. It's a plastic ball, and his brother's bailing out on it. And David said years later, well, I'm throwing a real baseball. Imagine what a real hitter is going to do if he sees a ball coming at him. So absolutely, the Laredo is just one part of his arsenal as a pitcher.
And shouldn't this guy, and you're bringing up David Cohn, and we go through this all the time, especially when Messina got into the Hall of Fame, how this guy, and I think David Cohn was a better pitcher, how this guy is not even a consideration for the Hall of Fame, Jack. I mean, how is that possible?
I thought it was very disappointing that he got knocked off the ballot so quickly. And I think what happens in his situation, Joe, is he falls short on the numbers. His victory total is shy of 200. I actually had a conversation with Joel Sherman of the New York Post, and he said if you take away the knee injury that David had in the minor leagues, and that cost him a year off the field, but then it cost him even more time coming back,
right,
trying
right.
to learn how to pitch again. If you take away the aneurysm, and he lost the whole season there, if you give David Cohn three more major league seasons, and he gets 40 wins, and he's up to 230 wins, we're probably talking about a guy who's in the Hall of Fame. And to your point, I had a friend, I'm not going to name him on this show, but he's probably listening right now. When Messina got in, he texted me and said, Cone's a way better pitcher than Messina.
He is.
Yeah,
he was.
We both felt that way.
And
yeah.
One other, he lost another season, too, because as a Met fan, of course, I remember this, 87 when he in San Francisco.
Oh, with,
he was
the, with the broken pinky.
That's right. He missed basically a whole year there, too.
And you know what, Joe? He's got a tale about that, too, about how when he came back and the pinky was kind of in a different spot on the baseball, he actually thought his pitches came back with a little crisper movement, a little better movement.
Interesting.
We're talking to Jack Curry. Yankee batting practice today will begin at 5:30. Got the pregame show at 6. First pitch at 6:35, which I love. I think this is fantastic. The Yankees are doing it this year. And then when you get a quick game like last night, because Paxton's dominating, you got the baseball game over before 9 o'clock. It's incredible. Give me your thoughts on James Paxton. We talk about the art of being a pitcher. We've seen what he's capable of doing in Seattle. He had the no-hitter. He had the 17-strikeout game. This was the first experience for the Yankee fan to see dominant James Paxton. What'd you think of from what you saw last night of the Big Maple?
Evan, I know it's mid-April. I know the Red Sox seem like a stale and stagnant team. But what Paxton did last night, that had to absolutely thrill the Yankees and give them hope for the rest of the season. If he can do that, and he's not going to do that every time, but if he can be that pitcher, I was thoroughly impressed with just how he attacked last night. And you could see it from the first inning that he was not messing around. He talked after the game about having watched some video, making some adjustments so that he was driving down the mound with a little more aggression and a little more force. And suddenly those kind of, there's nothing to sneeze at with a 96-mile-per-hour fastball, but suddenly the 96 was 99. The guy who was taking a lot of time between pitches against the Astros, and they were fouling off a lot of pitches, which, by the way, might have had something to do with him tipping his pitches. That guy was gone. This guy was an intimidator. This guy went out there and said, I am owning this game. I'm not letting this game get away. And I thought the fourth inning where the Red Sox had second and third, nobody out, and he blew through 3, 4, and 5, couple of lineouts and a strikeout. The game was over right there. That game was done because of Paxton getting through that situation.
You know, Jack, I don't want to – Paxton, obviously, a great game last night, but the pitching so far in baseball this year has not been good. I mean, it seems like we have an endless amount of 3-2 counts, walks constantly. You know, I mean, the ERAs on a lot of big-time pitchers this year are way out of whack, at least to this point in the season. What do you attribute that to?
Well, Joe, let's just take this Yankees-Red Sox series as a microcosm.
Right.
App, Paxton, Evaldi, and Sale.
Yep.
Look at the numbers that those four pitchers put up and who they were at the end of 2018 and who they've been at the beginning of 2019. I don't know that I have an overriding opinion as to what is happening or why this is happening. I can just speak to the Yankees because I've watched them most closely, but I'm looking at Paxton and Happ, guys who rely on their fastball command. And if you make a mistake, even if you're throwing 97 like Paxton, you're going to get yourself in trouble. I feel that's what's happened with Happ. This is a guy who throws inside, who lives up in the zone. Mm-hmm. And when he's putting the pitches where he wants to, he's going to be the pitcher he was last year. He didn't lose a game for the Yankees until the postseason. But this year, I think he's missed with the location a lot.
With all the injuries they're dealing with, I know you shift expectations as time goes on. I think people looked at the beginning of this schedule and said, boy, the Yankees could really fatten up. They could just beat up on a lot of these mediocre teams. I look at it this way and say they just have to survive the first month of the year. Just play 500 ball until they start to get healthier, and that would be a win because right now they just don't have a lot of good players out there. They're just so beat up with these injuries that it's about surviving the next month. What's your thoughts on that?
It's interesting you say that, Evan. Before I came on with you guys, I'm working on a commentary that's going to run over the weekend that's addressing the injuries and how your depth is tested. And one of the sentences I have in there is tread water, which is what you kind of just said, that you just need to keep your head above water until you start to get some of these guys back, Stanton and then Hicks and then they hope and Duhar. But you're right. We thought April was going to be a little bit of a cakewalk for them, and it hasn't been that. But I still think this is a very good team, and I think if you do get through April, and as you said, you'd love to be above 500, but I mean, they're 7-9 right now and with half of April gone. But if you can nose above 500, not let the Rays get too far, it's very helpful to the Yankees that the Red Sox are stumbling the way that they are. And then I think not only do you get those guys back, you both have been in major league clubhouses and covered these teams. I absolutely believe that there's there's a factor that goes beyond just the player coming back. I think it is a boost. Saw it with the Yankees the other day with CC Sabathia. I was in the clubhouse the day before he came back. A lot of people were talking about that. Then he comes back. He looks great over five innings. I think that naturally boosts the team's confidence. When you lose guys, to me, it naturally makes you say, oh, wow, okay. Mm-hmm. Now you're trying to survive without player A. Player A's backup, well, he was supposed to be in the minor leagues right now. I think these guys start to trickle back, and I think the confidence rises.
Talking to Jack Curry, talking baseball with him. Well, what's your thoughts overall on Clint Frazier, Jack?
I love Clint Frazier offensively, and I think the Yankees would tell you the same thing. I think defensively that there are parts of his game that he needs to tidy up. I actually talked to him after he had the two baseballs in Houston that he didn't catch. And
yep.
He said, listen, that has never happened to me in my career. Those are catchable baseballs. That's something I need to tidy up. But as a hitter, he shows you that there's lightning in that at-bat. And I thought in that Astros series, he actually, if you went back and watched every at-bat that the Yankees had in that Astros series against Verlander, Cole, and McHugh, he had the most confident at-bats of anybody in that lineup. And that's saying a lot for a guy who's still getting his feet wet at the major league level. Who does he become going forward? I don't know, but it's his job to prove that the Yankees that he deserves more at-bats. Right now, if the Yankees were totally healthy, I think they'd have a decision to make about Frazier versus Gardner. I mean, Frazier's the better offensive player right now. Gardner does a lot of things for you defensively, and the Yankees have Gardner as that warm, cozy blanket and a guy you rely on. But Frazier is the guy who's going to be a more impactful bat right now.
No question. We're talking to Jack Curry. He's got a book, Full Count, The Education of a Pitcher. Did it with David Cohn. It's coming out May 14th. What is the latest on Miguel Andujar, short-term and long-term, with the injury he's dealing with right now?
He was taking some ground balls. Then he took some swings. I think at some point, Evan, he's sort of going to have to jump into the deep end of the pool and test whether or not he can play with that shoulder injury. So I think we're a little bit of ways from that. I don't think you're going to see that in the next week to 10 days. But it's kind of interesting because every time you're at Yankee Stadium, every press conference with Aaron Boone pretty much starts with an injury update, and there's about eight players to check on. So they are optimistic about Andujar. I think they're slightly more optimistic now than when he first got the injury, but I still think there are some tests he has to pass before they realize if they can actually get anything out of him this year.
Do you think you're going to see Severino this year at all, Jack?
I do, Joe, but I think it's probably looking like it's going to be after the All-Star break.
Right.
Then when he gets back, every start at the beginning is for the Yankees, it's a hold your breath start. Well, who is he? Mm-hmm. What is he going to be? Joel Sherman, I keep mentioning Joel, I'm his PR agent here. Joel had a good article in the Post the other day in which he quoted Brian Cashman, and of all the injuries the Yankees have incurred, the Severino one is the one that is puzzling. I mean, Sanchez hurt himself dashing back, or trying to dash, I don't know if dash is the right word, lumbering back to third, and Duhar hurt himself diving to third. Stanton hurt himself on a swing. Cashman said the injury to Severino is the one that is a little puzzling because that's kind of not the injury that you should get as you're building your arm back up. It's almost an injury that would occur after you logged a lot of innings, not as you're just trying to build yourself back up.
You can make an argument for a lot of these, and even Didi, we'll include him in this. Who are they missing the most? Of all the key guys there without, who's the guy you'd probably put number one on them missing the most at this point?
I think you just said it, Evan. I would go with Didi Gregorius. I just think what he provides defensively, the at-bats that he gives, the hitter, the complete hitter that he has become, where you almost look forward to seeing Didi against the lefty. Okay, let's see what he's going to do now. Staying in on pitches, not committing against left-handers. And I know that the analytic folks would just want to focus on what's going on in the field statistically, as do I. I know that's how you win games. I also think they miss Didi's personality. I mean, this guy is as popular in that clubhouse. I kind of chuckled last night if you're on Twitter, and I think you are, Evan. I'm not sure Joe's a Twitter guy.
No, not quite. No.
Didi put his first game-winning tweet out last night, something he hadn't done, and I think they miss him the most. I mean, I'm not going to sleep on Severino. I mean, you want a number one ace, but there's something about having your everyday shortstop out there, a guy with power and a guy who provides the defense that he does.
What about Sanchez overall when he comes back? I mean, you know, watching Sanchez, and I know he's had some pretty, you know, the problems this year have really been throwing guys out. He's had some issues throwing balls into center field. We've seen him get picked off base a couple times this year, kind of, you know, maybe be sleeping a little bit. We've seen that. Obviously, we know he can hit. But what about him overall with, you know, what I'm talking about, Jack?
I think two things. First of all, in spring training, I actually thought Gary Sanchez seemed a lot more committed to me. First interview that he did with reporters, I sensed the level of both embarrassment and frustration. Doesn't consider himself a 186 hitter. I mean, no major league player should, or you wouldn't be a major league player.
Chris Davis.
Right. And then when the season started, it's interesting, throwing has never been an issue for this guy. That's his weapon. That was his calling card when he first came up. No one wanted to run on him. So I'm actually going to say I think those throws are a bit of an aberration. I think there was one that Torres, quite honestly, should have caught. So whatever he's got throwing errors, three or four, you could probably subtract one. I actually think he was better at blocking pitches. I don't think he has a pass ball yet this year. And I thought his hitting was rounding into shape. Not surprisingly, Camden Yards was a tonic for him, as it is for many hitters. So I think, guys, that injury came at the absolute worst time for Sanchez, because I think he was feeling better about himself offensively. And again, I don't think the throwing is an issue. I don't think that teams are sitting down in their advanced scouting meetings and saying, you know what, Sanchez has had a couple of throwing errors. Why don't we try and challenge him? I don't think that's the case. I still think he's feared as a guy throwing the ball.
Hey, one guy I would consider keeping around if this team fully gets healthy is Gio Urshela, because, and we know Terry Francona played him in the postseason because of his defense. Man, he can play D at third base. We saw him make that play great play last night. He's hit a little bit. He's almost earning a potential spot on this roster once they're healthy, Jack.
I agree with you, Evan, and I think defense sometimes gets underrated. We always want to know what a guy does for you offensively. And heading into the season, Urshela was a .225 lifetime hitter with 8 home runs. I actually think he looks better than that to me offensively. He looks like a guy. He talked about making some adjustments. He wouldn't be specific, but some adjustments with his swing. But defensively, you could see why a team looks at this guy and says you absolutely want him on the field in late innings. Let's play the whole scenario out. I'm going to throw a controversy out there before it even happened.
Uh-oh.
You could absolutely envision that if Andujar came back and you had Urshela on the roster, you are no doubt putting Urshela in there for defense in late innings.
No doubt.
And this is not a knock on Andujar, who I think worked really hard in spring training, and he changes his motion with his throws. He's got a little hop thing that he was doing on ground balls to give himself a little more first step quickness. But Urshela, he's gold glove quality over there.
You know, another controversy, if it is one, is that maybe you DH Andujar a lot once he's back, because you want his bat in the lineup. But, I mean, that kind of defense is that good. And obviously that depends on a lot of who else is back. I mean, if everybody's back, you may not have that room necessarily. Now Greg Bird's on the injured list. But that's also potential where Urshela actually plays. I mean, remember, we were talking about it. The Indians played him in the postseason a couple of years ago because Francona wanted that glove out there.
That's an avenue you could absolutely go down and pursue. They seem to want to know that they have Andujar back whole, because, as you know, they rotate guys in that DH spot. I don't think they want to have one guy there.
Right.
But you could absolutely see that as a scenario where if Andujar is back, why not DH him a couple times a week?
Jack, before I let you go, pop the book again, May 14th, full count with David Cone. Go ahead.
Absolutely. It's DavidConeBook.com. May 14th, we're actually going to be signing some books at Yankee Stadium and being part of a first pitch ceremony. May 15th, Barnes & Noble, Manhattan. May 16th, Long Island, book review. May 18th, New Jersey, Northvale, New Jersey. So there's my mini commercial.
Awesome.
There you go.
Look forward to it. Thank
All
you,
right,
Jack.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Jack Curry, the name of the book is Full Count, Education of a Pitcher. It'll come out on Lottery Day on May 14th. And, of course, the game tonight will be on the YES Network.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scored.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.